Will you pray with me? God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who has brought us thus far on the way, thou who has by thy might led us into the light, keep us forever in the path, we pray, lest our feet stray from the places, our God, where we met thee, lest our hearts drunk with the wine of the world, we forget thee. Shadowed beneath thy hand, may we forever stand, true to you, our God, and true to our native lands. Amen. This prayer was written by James Weldon Johnson as the third stanza of a recitation recited by 500 school children on the occasion of a visit by Booker T. Washington to the then segregated Stanton School in Jacksonville, Florida in 1900. Johnson, like many other African American poets, hymnists, lyricists, and librettists, embodied the cries to God for help, healing, and hope within the creative, divinely inspired psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. This recitation was eventually set to music by James's brother, John Rosamond Johnson, and was adopted by the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People as the Negro National Anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. Lift every voice and sing, till earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening sky. Let it resound loud as the rolling seas. Sing a song full of faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. For many, lift every voice and sing is an attractive aspiration. Yet increasingly, more experience the dim and dark reality of the weary years and silent tears rather than the ringing harmonies of liberty. In our homiletic passage that was so well done this morning, we don't necessarily find weary years, but we do find the disciples seated with the master after a number of extremely long and weary days, filled with some not so silent tears. After a night of unsuccessful fishing, you saw it here, Jesus reveals himself to seven of the disciples, blessing them with a huge catch and then inviting them to dine on the beach to a charcoal fire. Ever the redeemer, ever the reconciler, Jesus leans over to a rather traumatized Peter, who I imagine is still challenged by his own anxiety, guilt, and shame of his nefarious conduct just days ago. You see, the last time we saw Peter, he abruptly dismembered Malchus's ear. He denied knowing Jesus three times. And according to Matthew, Mark, and Luke, he ran off weeping bitterly. Even at the sight of the marvelous discovery of the miraculously empty tomb, Peter reappears, but then rather than remaining there with Martha and Mary, he runs home like a coward and even locks the door. Peter is paralyzed with grief, shame, and embarrassment, with an absolute sense of humiliation, and yet Jesus summons him face to face for a post-meal intimate conversation. In order to get at the depth of this intriguing interaction, we must ask the question that the great mystic Howard Thurman asked quite often: who is this Jesus? Who is this divinely inseminated human being born to unwed parents? Who is is this prophesied, fully divine, fully human progeny, born in the favela, the tortoise, the slum, the surumu, the barrio, the Biddenville, the hood of Nazareth. In the region of Galilee, a Jewish enclave that was overpopulated, destitute, and extremely poor, that by contemporary Americanese vernacular, Nazareth would be in the same categorization as Africa, Haiti, and, well, you know the rest of that. Who is this young carpenter who preached compassion over compromise, forgiveness over fear, love over division? Who is this holy once refugee who got indignant when he saw children mishandled, misled, and abused as pawns for adult political pandering? Who is this Christ who listened and loved those who cried me too and thought enough about black lives to have Simon the Cyrene participate in the crucifixion narrative by carrying Jesus' cross? Who is this learned rabbi who hung out with lepers, conversed with at least one Samaritan woman, and spoke to the wind and the water as if they were people? Who is this life-giving light of the world who fed thousands at a time, healed the sick, and even raised the dead? Who is this Jesus? Jesus was neither zealot, neither Pharisee, neither Sadducee, neither Essene. Jesus was neither authoritarian, neither political overseer, neither elected Jewish leader. Jesus was the one who was prophesied to come and to bring the good news to the poor, to set the captives free, to give sight to the blind, to give liberty to the oppressed, and to forgive our debts. Jesus rejected the allure of institutional power, for he did not find that his power came from the law, but he taught, shared, and was empowered by the Spirit. In fact, Jesus was not compelled to be an advocate of law and order, but an exemplar of mercy and justice. Who is this Jesus? Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Who is this Jesus? It was Jesus who not only cleaned up Peter's mess by healing the ear of Malchus, but who was about to blow Peter's mind with three not so simple questions. Imagine with me the interaction of one who was a mumbling, stumbling, fumbling disciple walking on the beach with the Good Shepherd. Imagine with me the fear and trepidation of the one who had not only denied knowing the Son of Man, but who also abandoned his post, deserted his calling, but now was being summoned to take an intimate stroll on the beach, one on one. The tension in this scene is so thick you can cut it with your finger. Peter had been agonizing in shame with guilt and fear for days, not realizing that the one whose trust he betrayed would summon him for a walk. Peter's heart was so heavy that every time he got ready to apologize or fall prostrate on the ground before God incarnate, he froze, falling steps behind Jesus' gentle pace. Peter was messed up, y'all. He was scared. He was angry. He was embarrassed. He was fearful. He was disoriented. He was befuddled. Peter was increasingly becoming unhinged. And then it happened. Jesus called him by his birth name. Simon, son of John. Reminding him of who Peter was before he had been asked to leave everything and to follow Christ. Repositioning him in his unregenerated state, Jesus calls him by the name that he went by when Jesus first met him. Jesus forces Peter, in his ever so clever way, to remember his life before his transformation, to remember his life before his salvation and his consecration. Jesus, already up inside of Peter's mental space, calls out, "Simon, Son of God, do you love me more than these?" Trembling and petrified, Peter responds, "Yes, Lord. You know I love you." In this first of three not so simple questions, Jesus asks Peter, "Do you love me more than any of the other disciples?" with an unconditional, radical, selfless love in the most pure and highest manner imaginable. Peter responds, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you with all the affection that I have. I'm extremely fond of you. I love you as a companion, as a sibling." Jesus' response was even more perplexing than the question, since Peter was inherently awaiting some form of reprimand or reminder of his past failures. Yet in the moment, Jesus instructs him to share that love with my young, with my tender, with my impressionable. Share that love that you have for me with those who are new in the faith, those who have been evangelized and now need to be discipled. Feed my lambs. Peter, anxious about what could possibly happen next. And then he hears Jesus call his name once again. "Simon, Son of John, do you love me?" Again, Jesus uses that agape form of love. And Peter, in his human frailty, yet with all humility, responds with a declaration of phileo love, to which Jesus commissions him to shepherd those in the faith who are strong and mature and yet still need some direction. "Tend my sheep." Worried, annoyed, and somewhat infuriated, Peter, hoping that the conversation might quickly come to an end so he can go off and process, heard the sound of the Messiah's voice for the third time, this time with a different inflection, with a different timbre, with a different tonality. Jesus says, "Do you really have affection and fondness for me? Do you really love me as a companion, as a sibling?" As one who had just made confession and felt affirmed and heard, Peter, still broken, still weak, still humbled and afraid, says, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I don't have the capacity to love you the way that you have always loved me. You know that as much as I want to believe that I do, and as much as I confess that I do, my understanding of how much you really love me continues to be beyond my very being and certainly beyond my imagination. Lord, I've learned that all I can do is to do my best to be honest with you and to share my limitations, even my limited ability to love you the way that you love me." As Peter was in the middle of his next statement, Jesus says, Now you are ready to not only tend my sheep, but to feed them. Feed them the good news as I have fed you. Feed them the fruit of the Spirit as I have fed you. Feed them all the teachings that I have fed you. Feed them in a way where they will know that you will give your very life that they might live. Feed them as I have fed you. Follow me. In that moment, Peter is commissioned to the pastoral role of under-shepherd of Christ's bride, the church. Peter is reinstated and with the aid of remembrance and confession is forgiven. And just like you and just like me, Peter is distracted by a momentary tweet. By a glimpse of a post on Facebook. By a cleverly captioned image on Instagram. In the midst of the transformation, in the midst of the work that God is doing through Peter, Peter is distracted. Peter looks and sees John over his shoulder and begins to inquire about a breaking news tweet revealing a rumor that John would live forever. Jesus quickly claps back and says, follow me. See, maybe you have had an experience where Jesus asked you a question or two or three that you know you were not fully able to answer in a way that you would like. Maybe Jesus has called you to a ministry that you might not feel fully equipped to lead. Maybe Jesus is calling you out of your broken past and you really, really, really don't want to come out of it yet. Maybe Jesus is trying to restore you, revive you, rejuvenate you, recommission you, and you feel like you're not ready yet. Maybe Jesus has a particular, peculiar assignment for you, and you really don't want it because it seems that you will be alone and in solitude. Maybe Jesus wants to know if you really love him, really, really, really love him. Maybe Jesus has asked you to feed his lambs, to tend his sheep, and to even feed his sheep. If so, let the words of Jesus to John be the words of Jesus to you. Keep your eyes fixed on me and follow me. Hear Jesus say, where I go, you go. Follow me. Where I send you, you go. Follow me, believe in me, trust in me, have faith in me. Follow me. When I call you, come. Follow me. Stay in my presence even when I'm not physically there. Follow me. Follow me into deeper relationship. Follow me. Follow me and teach my lambs and my sheep to lift every voice and sing. Follow me. Follow me and hear the harmonies of liberty ring. Follow me. Follow me and rejoice high as the listening skies and loud as the rolling seas. Follow me. Follow me and let the faith teach you. Follow me. Follow me and let the hope lead you. Follow me. Follow me and let a new day begin. Follow me. Follow me and let us march on to victory. Follow me. Follow me. Follow me. Hear Jesus say, follow me.